Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, the gracious, the most compassionate. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. I hope you are able to hear me. I never had a good time with sound systems in the past, but I hope that now I'll have some luck. If there's any problem anyway, you let me know. I've come to talk and to give some brief background on how I came to peace of mind, and that I translate as Islam. First of all, we should clarify certain points, because many might not know certain facts. We have to begin by saying that Islam is not the name of a faith or a unique faith which is presented for the first time by the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. He is not the founder of Islam. In the Quran, which is the book revealed to the Prophet Muhammad, it makes it clear that Islam means submission. If you translate the word Islam, means submission. Submission to the will of God. And therefore Islam is the one and only faith which has been revealed consistently to mankind since the beginning. And we can see in the Quran mention of many prophets, familiar figures who are familiar to Christians, to Jews, and of course to Muslims. We find that these figures have been sent to man at different times, bringing the same essential message, the same consistent faith, that of Islam, that of submission to the will of the Almighty Creator. We find the names of Noah, of Abraham, of Moses, of Jesus, and of course the last prophet, Muhammad, peace be upon them all. And these prophets are not founders of faith. They are messengers of the one and only God, sent to revive the religion, the one and only religion. Submission and obedience to God. I was introduced to Islam in 1975 or thereabouts, when I was given a copy of the Quran. Before that time, I had some idea of Islam as being more like an ancient culture, something to do with kind of architecture. I didn't know if it was attached to the pyramids or not. But it seemed to me that Muslims were more like a national identity, somewhat of people who were either Arab or Turkish or from a different alien part of the world. And certainly in the West, Islam is mostly, even today, still perceived as something quite foreign and quite strange. To give you a bit of my background, I was born in London, in the UK, in this very exciting age of TV, of science, space, travel, etc. And I was growing up in a civilization which I felt was very promising. I was given a Christian background, a Christian education. I went to a Roman Catholic school, even though my father was Greek Orthodox. He was basically Christian, so therefore my parents sent me to that school. As I started to open my eyes to the world as a youngster, I started to see a few contradictions. And I had a lot of choices, because that's the thing we have in the West. But there were contradictions too. It seemed to me that the religious side, because we had religious lessons, were teaching me one way of looking at life, and the other lessons, the general subjects, were teaching me another view. In my religious lesson, I was taught, for instance, that life basically is a kind of suffering. I said, well, why should we be brought into life if it has to be suffering? Why should it be difficult? Certain doctrines I found difficult also, that God is three, but God is actually not three, God is one. There were certain things which I found difficult to cope with. On the other hand, I saw the scientific view of life, generally accepted, that, oh, life is just, you know, to be enjoyed. And don't worry about religion. That's maybe for another time. Life is to be enjoyed. But then I thought, well, if life is to be enjoyed, and then all of a sudden life is to be taken away from you at death, what's the point? So there's a contradiction. I said, what is life about? Basically, I could see, in the materialistic sense, there were winners and losers. The winners were the ones who had all the money, had all the power, had nice cars, nice houses, nice clothes, rich friends, parties, etc. And the losers were those, you know, who had to struggle and strive to make ends meet. Well, I said, certainly, at least I'm going to try and be of the winners. And that's the mode of education that we find mostly in the West. One is geared up, geared to win. Win for oneself. And I looked around me as I started going into further into my education. I looked at the choices, and I had a very slight talent to, let's say, express myself in art. And I reckoned that, well, it's going to be much easier for me, because I was certainly no academic, and this is the only way I would have ever got to a place like this, a university. But anyway, I was no academic, and I had only one talent, that was to express myself in art. And as I looked around, I saw there was majority of artists were hungry. I said, well, that's certainly not for me. Then I looked a bit further and I saw there was another form of art which was much successful and much quicker getting results. And that was the music business. I suddenly was born in a time when music was exploding, and this was the message of our time also, the medium of our youth. So I went into the music business. When I left school, I decided to try and get into that business. So I managed to find someone who believed in me enough to pay for my first recording, and we tried to sell that recording to various record labels. I chose a ridiculous name so that people wouldn't forget my name. I had my own name actually, Stephen, and then I just added the word cat to the beginning, because I knew that there were some suckers who, you know, used to like animals so much that they would end up liking me just because they liked the name cat. And a lot of those animal lovers in England, especially. So chose his name Cat Stevens, then I chose another equally ridiculous title to begin my career with, I Love My Dog. And so I began. Obvious that I was seeking commercial results. But that was my objective. Anyway, as I went into music, into show business, I had to do all the things. I had to have interviews. I had to suddenly come up with something to say in my interviews. I didn't know what to say. It was nothing special. I'd grown up, you know, in London, that was all. And I didn't know quite what to say. I tried to build up my image, you know. And in a way, I found it very difficult. Then I was thrown onto the stage and told to, you know, sing and tour the country. I had my first hit record. All of a sudden, I had to be worked, you know. And I was working very hard, doing tours, doing three gigs a night, trying to make that, you know, money and make my name. Anyway, I didn't find it easy because basically I was quite shy. I think I was an artist in the first place. And then you had this contradiction. You have to sort of express yourself openly in front of lots of people, and that was difficult. So I found it easier to drink before I went on stage. And it didn't improve my music, but it helped me to do what I had to do. So after about a year of this kind of fast life and thrown into this show business, I broke down. I had contracted tuberculosis. That was when I was around 20 years old. So all of a sudden, I was taken out of the limelight, out of this fast living world, into hospital. And there, I had a chance to think again. I had a chance to reflect. Where was I going? At that time, there was an awakening taking place in the world. People were turning to Eastern religions. There was the Maharishi, there was, you know, yoga and meditation and everything connected with it, psychedelia, etc. And I was interested in this new discovery. While I was in hospital, I started reading some books about meditation and started trying to practice meditation. I was looking for that peace which I didn't find outside in the world. I thought perhaps I would find that peace within myself. I started growing my beard in a way to reject the outer world, to reject the kind of shiny image of the world, and just be me, natural. I started writing songs. That was the only way I knew how to express myself, about my new discovery, my inner discovery. In fact, I'd found another side of life, that spiritual side which I'd kind of forgotten back at school. But it was a different approach. It seemed more open, without borders, limitless. But basically what you found was the human self being the center of this concept. Anyway, I started writing songs while I was discovering all these things and thinking. And then came, if you like, my second career, or my second bout with the show business. I'd already had my first inoculation, so the second one was a bit easier. When I went to the record company the second time round, I started dictating what I wanted. And I realized that I had to have more control over my career. When I made my first, what I might call, successful album, and in this album it contains certain songs which I feel were very relative to my time, that time of searching, of questioning, of alternatives, alternative lifestyles. And I felt I was going somewhere, and so I was writing about it. It must have hit a string, because that album and the albums which were to follow made a very big mark. It was obvious that I was going somewhere where everybody else felt that they were going, or that they wanted to go. Suddenly I was a star again, I was back in the music business, but this time I had higher awareness about how to control my career this time, not to let them work me to the ground, but to take control. But basically, I still didn't feel comfortable. And I changed my identity, I changed my style. I was used to changing. I liked changing, because I never found anything I was actually happy with. Then I had my big success, in fact, in this country. And I came to the US, and all of a sudden I was a product, the Cat Stevenson's product. And I had to sit down with my press guy and sit down and think about ways to, you know, tell myself. And I went along with it, because I thought, well, this is harmless, you know, nothing wrong. To say anywhere in the teachings of Buddhism, or in the teachings of even my Christian faith, that thou shalt not make music. Thou shalt not, you know, fool people. Thou shalt not make images of thyself. Actually, it does say that, but you don't quite interpret it like that. Anyway, this was the road I took. But I wasn't content with Buddhism. I started reading other books. I used to go into my favorite metaphysical bookshop and see what was new. I discovered Zen. I never quite understood it. Even today I don't quite understand what it is. It's just an interesting name. Zen. And then I studied the Tao superficially again. Tao meaning the way. More or less connected with Confucius. From that I discovered the I Ching. I don't know if you know the I Ching. A kind of game of fate. You throw the die and you see what's going to happen to you. If you don't, you throw it again. And of course I was regularly looking at the stars and watching the moon, seeing what was going on. And I tried to look into my Greek heritage, because my father was, as I say, Greek Orthodox. Actually, he came from Cyprus. My mother's Swedish. But I sort of took on more sort of my father's side. And I started looking into the Greek philosophers, and I came across Pythagoras. I thought, hey, this is it. Solution must be in numbers. Everybody can accept numbers. One is one. And this must be the solution. I started making sure that I didn't go on anything that made 13. I wouldn't go on planes with, you know, PA 13. They don't have PA 13 anyway, but I wouldn't go on such a... And I used to be careful about numbers. But numbers is not really helping me morally. And there was no depth to it. But I kept on searching, looking at different books, different ideas, Gurdjieff, etc. Anyway, I ended up as a vegetarian. And I had on me little things like a cross, and I'd have a little eye, you know, the Egyptian eye, and something else which I picked up from Brazil. I carried all these things just in case one of them was right. Kind of insurance. But no religion actually impressed me to the point where I'd say that I am Buddhist, or I am Christian, or I am this or that. I avoided that branding. Because I didn't believe that any particular religion was perfect. There was always something which wasn't quite right, something that didn't live up to my expectations, or that you couldn't use today. I thought that eventually perhaps everyone has to just come to his own philosophy, his own lifestyle. And so long as it didn't interfere with anyone else, perhaps that was the way to go. In fact, I had become what you might call a musical monk. I was totally devoted to my music, to my art. That was really my religion. And I tried as much as I could to improve my art. But the more I improved my art, the less I improved myself. I was concentrating on outward things, expression of myself, rather than improving myself. I had achieved what most probably people would say is success. I had become, you know, I had made my millions, I had my fast cars, I had a flat in Rio, I had this, I had that. But I was deep down unsatisfied. What happened? In 1975 or thereabouts, my brother took a trip to Jerusalem. In a way for him it was, he's my elder brother, and he was always like a bit of a guide, you know, and a philosopher. He always used to help me, give me ideas. Anyway, he visited Jerusalem, perhaps as a kind of a pilgrimage, because growing up as a Christian, you believe that, you know, there is something special in Jerusalem. And indeed, there is something special in Jerusalem. Anyway, he went there to discover what it was, if there was anything. And he wasn't very impressed with the churches or the temples. But what he did discover was a magnificent mosque standing, as it were, like a crown on the top of Jerusalem. And there was this kind of secret religion, Islam. What is this religion? So he ventured, you know, to go into the mosque to see what was in there. And he felt, when he walked inside that mosque, a peace that he didn't find anywhere else. He was thrown out soon after that because he wasn't a Muslim. But that didn't deter him from finding out more or going a bit further. To UK, he bought a copy of the Quran because this is known to be the book for Muslims. And he ended up giving it to me as a gift. Well, I was very happy, obviously, to receive the gift from my brother. And I treasured it because it was a gift. Didn't even have to read it, I just kind of kept it. But then I decided one day, well, let's have a look at this book. I didn't approach it immediately because even I had prejudice. At that time, of course, I had grown up with the view that Muslims were Turks and basically enemies of the Greeks. So I had